course, I don't think children should vape, but if I want a vape flavored, a cotton candy flavored vape, I should be able to fucking buy it. It is maddening. Tell your children not to vape.
I have to have a secret passcode at my smoke shop to get the flavored vapes.
I mean, that's what you can you can buy flavored vapes anywhere in Los Angeles. Well, I find them all over the place. I actually think that your guy's making you do a password because he's fucking with you because there's a vape shop down the street. No, you don't have to do that at.
But my place, well, I think maybe it's specialty smoke shops that would, but if they, I don't know what the rule is, but the specific smoke shop, like the cops will come in undercover and try to bust them selling flavored vapes.
Jesus Christ.
Sit on down and pour yourself a glass.
And tune into your favorite podcast,
where things will be misquoted
and opinions ain't sugar-coated.
'Cause DJ and Kelly are locked and probably loaded.
Hey guys, welcome to Locked and Probably Loaded with DJ and Kelly. I'm your host, DJ Qualls, and I'm here with Kelly Blackheart. Hey, Kelly.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I can't believe how easy that's become to say. I'm not good at saying things.
What do you mean?
Did that intro. I don't think I've messed up that intro one time, knock wood, have I?
You're a natural. Oh, well, you should be an actor. Line.
Exactly.
Imagine if you're asking
now
for
it's,
the line.
Now I'm aware of it and it's over. Line. Kelly.
What?
Kelly made me go see the worst movie in the history of movies. Movie is so bad. It's basically
Isaac, you're gonna need your mic this episode because I know you're gonna do some defending. But first of all,
Lisa Frankenstein is an insult to every Lisa who ever lived. Lisa Simpson, Lisa and Colt Jam.
It is Lisa Frank, honestly, mostly.
My girlfriend Lisa loved it. She thought it was the best movie.
Do you really have a girlfriend named Lisa?
Yes, I do.
You gotta get rid of her.
And
she has to go.
She has to go.
It is so bad. The motivations aren't real. Nothing. It's just things that happen, and they're completely unconnected. They couldn't even. This woman could not even convince me she was eating cottage cheese. Like, it is so not believable. And I love suspending my disbelief. I mean, I've done so many. I've marginally bad movies in my life that I'm begging you to suspend disbelief, but I would never ask you to do this. It is over the line.
That was my biggest problem is I certainly don't have any problem suspending my disbelief, but it didn't feel like the story, it felt like Mod Podge of a bunch of different sketches that were about the same characters, but there was so much leaping from one thing to the next thing that I'm like, well, how do they explain? And I'm sure that was an artistic choice, but the whole time we were like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
but it's so weird. She's suddenly attracted to this thing, and all of a sudden she's wearing these clothes that she wasn't her character's clothes, with no motivation behind it. It was like they did a mashup of Heathers and Edward Scissorhands. Mm-hmm. And just took clips of them, and there was no connective tissue.
It was like one long movie montage, like makeover
really
montage.
Was. Really. That's exactly what it was.
It was an hour and a half makeover montage. Because where did they even get clothes for him? He walked into her closet and came out wearing men's clothes. What's going on there? Why did she have all those in there? I didn't believe his.
Take them from your dad. They didn't care, and that's the thing. It felt like, well, we don't care. We don't care to make this make sense. And people say that's a choice. I once did a movie that didn't make sense, and we called it a surrealistic thriller, and people felt too stupid not to like it, so it got good reviews. That's basically what I feel as they tried to do to us, but we weren't having it.
See, that I think, and that's what spiraled me into being mad about it, because I was going to go on Rotten Tomatoes, and if it was like a 13%, I would have gone, okay, cool. And I wouldn't have thought about it ever again, but I went on Rotten Tomatoes and it was like 82%, and I was like, we're being gaslit.
It's a line in the sand for me. And like, you know how people are like breaking up and not being friends with their family over politics? Yeah. It's this for me.
Isaac, this will be your last episode.
This is it. I have to quit because my girlfriend Lisa, not only did she love it because her name is Lisa, but she works as a costume designer. So right. She broke it down for me after the themes of the color palettes and why the lead character was wearing black.
That is not a story. That is yeah, good costume design.
It's one thing. Like I definitely am somebody who's like, not every movie needs to be like something that you dissect and it's this amazing work of art. Some things can just be fun. I can understand when people enjoy things that aren't well written, yeah. but they're fun. And so I could understand that she campy, liked those aspects.
If it was over the top on purpose, it literally makes no sense.
What I didn't understand was like, so the dead guy draws a lightning bolt on her hand and then she goes, I have a tanning bed in the back shed. So like, at least let there be like a book where there's a tale of a tanning bed that brings people back to life. Like it just didn't make sense, the choices that were being made. And nothing it felt like sense. Maybe they cut out scenes that explain things for time or
but
something.
But here's the thing. Here's
the
what I like.
The tanning bed represents the electricity that could be the lightning bolt.
I'm going to punch you right in the face. But the whole house is full of things that are powered by
people,
electricity.
My southern accent comes out. I can't not yell or threaten people without a southern accent. I'm going to punch you right in the face. Come over later. Peggy made a cobbler. Like, it's always like that.
Okay, can I tell you one endearing thing?
Yeah.
Sure. The most endearing thing. Yeah. It was directed by Zelda Williams, which is Robin Williams' daughter.
Yes. Yeah.
And at the very end, when they're sitting on the park bench.
And he's wearing the suspenders.
He's wearing suspenders.
That got me.
Here's the thing. That's a nice thing.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing. It is not a 2-hour movie. Do you know how hard it is to have a movie made in Hollywood? That movie costs $13 million. A reviewer said that it was like a 2-hour long Saturday Night Live sketch, and that's basically what it was. It was Caveman Lawyer from the 90s.
But yeah, just not even believable. Like, she wasn't scared when this guy covered in mud and dirt and worms was. She's like, here, come into my house.
It's
take
like
a shower.
The poster should have been like Lisa Frankenstein. It will make you miss Encino Man.
She was just too horny. She was too horny for her own good. Really, it's like that.
That's the moral.
That's the moral of the story.
If you're a young girl who's horny, you're going to die.
Yeah. Well, that was the entire theme of all 80s movies.
Yeah. And horror movies.
So
too.
Horny, yeah. She'll die.
The thing is, here's what I would say to your Lisa.
Shut the fuck up. This is why women shouldn't have fucking rights.
I see you've read my blog. No, you know I don't think like that. But here's what I would like to say. All crew members do that. So anybody who works in film, the lighting was gorgeous, so it was a good movie if you're a grip, right? Or a DP. Which does not stand for double penetration. It stands for director of photography.
Sometimes it does.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it does. It can mean both. But people will look at things based on dragging your own experience into it, right? That's how we look at everything. But I've had a lot of experiences. I've done some stuff. And I'm dragging all my experiences into me. And I'm telling you, this movie doesn't fucking make sense.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Wasn't for us. It was certainly, we were... by the way, I did not force you to see it. I have a Regal monthly membership, and DJ likes going to the movies. So every once in a while, I'll go, I'm going to go see a movie. And then I didn't even know what it was about. I literally just saw the screenshot of it, and I was like, oh, that looks like it could be fun. I sent you a screenshot of the synopsis, and you go, oh, I'd see that.
Yeah,
that's
but me. Here's the thing.
You.
I feel like...
What's okay? This is like, why you're getting revenge on me?
I feel like something has been done to me, is what I feel like. And like... I had this overwhelming urge to bend your fingers back.
Oh, I know. You did want to break.
I was like, the
fingers.
Next time you're around me, you better wear some gloves.
Things were easier for us friendship wise before Lisa Frankenstein.
Yeah, things have gotten complicated in the last 2 weeks.
Now we're in the after Lisa Frankenstein timeline, and
it was
very
really,
tense.
Really, really bad. Yeah, and it was so bad I couldn't believe it. And then to find other people also not think it was bad, I was shocked by that. And then I got worried. And then I started thinking that we were doomed as a society.
I was texting Jack Hackett about it so much. Like paragraphs of just like, well, this didn't make sense. And Jack goes, you need to stop thinking about this. And I go, I can't.
So,
in my defense, real quick.
Yeah.
Have you ever had an experience where someone else is having such a good time?
100%.
That you have a good time on their behalf? Lisa
That's
loved it.
Every sexual experience I've ever had.
Same. Yeah. That's why I don't have sex anymore.
So I wasn't analyzing it the whole way that I normally do with my film brain because I was just looking over and she was like, wow. Like she was enjoying the costumes and the set design.
It's like going to Disneyland with a kid.
Right.
But we weren't even looking at it with film brain. We were looking at it with people that are going to the movies.
Yeah.
And we could not...
Yeah.
It really just was.
And this happened to be the one movie that we didn't smuggle. Well, I think I smuggled alcohol in, but I didn't. You didn't.
I was sober. And the only difference is I wasn't eating Milk Duds. I mean, I usually eat Milk Duds at the movies, and I didn't eat Milk Duds this time. Milk Duds can't be that important to completely skew my absence of
what if we go see it again? And the only thing changes, you have Milk Duds, and you're like, holy shit, the costumes.
I have to do a 37-minute apology.
Do you know that the color palettes really go along with the theme of the story?
I write an apology letter to Lisa, his girlfriend.
Sorry for telling you to shut the fuck up on my podcast.
Yeah, I did not say that, by the way. Here's the thing, perception becomes the truth sometimes. I didn't say that. I would never say that to your face.
You can find out what other insults he has for you on our Patreon. Patreon.com/loadedpod.
Yeah, go right there. So you did. I felt failed in that experience, but Kelly also did something that has completely altered my life. Kelly introduced me, and this is not an advertisement at all. No one's advertising on our podcast, maybe ever, but they're certainly not doing it now. And Kelly introduced me to CeraVe tinted sunscreen, and it is a game changer. It is the best product anyone has ever invented. I do it every day. I mean, sunscreen is good to do every day, but it just evens your skin tone out, and it matches every skin tone, which is what's so crazy.
Yeah, it just blends into your color.
It's really, really, really good stuff.
It's good for people who don't, like the only time I ever put makeup on is to come here. I look like a bum 97% of my life, and CeraVe is the reason I'm able to do
it's
that.
It's 13, 30, 51 thing at Amazon. It is a life changer, and I love it. And the irony of me even talking about this here is that I recently bitched about when after I came out, Hollywood is only offering me parts, but playing guys who fall apart because they left their moisturizer at home. And then you show me this.
You become that guy.
And I can't stop thinking about
the
it.
The stereotypes
are true. Yeah.
Yeah, that was you used it in Hawaii, I think, and then you're like, what
amazing.
Is this?
Yeah, what is this product? How can it match your skin tone and my skin tone?
Because we're both
it's
pale
witchcraft.
As hell.
Exactly, because we have exactly the same skin tone.
We both could have been cast easily in Lisa Frankenstein. God,
she made
so
good
horny.
Actors bad. I don't understand it. There's some really good actors in that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. It was.
Do you guys have any Oscars reactions? That was this last Sunday.
I didn't. I was traveling that day, so I didn't see it.
Oh, just recap. What happened?
Can you remind us?
Oppenheimer won a ton of shit. The Flower Moon got absolutely nothing. Maestro got nothing. And then Poor Things won a ton of shit, too.
Oh, I can't wait. We're going to watch
Poor Things.
Poor Things today. Maybe today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have time today.
I want to see Poor Things.
Yeah, I wanted to see that too. I mean, I've never been somebody who really has cared about the Oscars, mostly because the movies that end up getting nominated generally aren't things that I'm going to see anyway, unless somebody that I trust is like, this is really good. But there's so much stuff that feels like it gets made specifically to win awards.
But also, people don't realize this about awards, is that they are bought, or at least the nominations are bought. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to launch
an Oscar campaign.
Yeah. Ann Dowd a couple of years ago for a movie. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was I don't remember what it was, but she was in a movie that did really well and submitted herself in the Oscar race, and it cost her hundreds of thousands of dollars. I can't remember if she got nominated. Can you look that up for
Same
me?
Same with like the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I think people are the perception that these awards get given to people, but almost everything people have to pay for. Forbes under 40, like you're paying to be on those lists.
She gets nominated for things all the time, right? Like she gets nominated. She was on that show, Handmaid's Tale. Mm-hmm. But she did a movie where like every year that I've been on a TV show, it's like legit, was critically acclaimed. Mm-hmm. I got a message from the studio asking me if I wanted to fill out an Emmy nomination ballot or a request. But they also tell you it's going to cost you about $10,000 to just get the request in, and then probably another $100,000 in it just to get in consideration for it.
Yeah. So keep that in mind, everybody, because literally everywhere, even the podcast awards, they email you asking if you want to submit yourself for them. Like and we were always too lazy to do that for Heidi. I think it's,
like, the thing is, the fact is, I also, like, I love being an actor. I think being a storyteller, which is what we are at our core, is a really noble profession. And the perks are great when it works, but it doesn't work for majority of the people that do it. Most actors are jobbing actors. And so it's a tough life. But I really respect the doing of it and the people who try to do it. Sometimes you'll see a performance that was like, man, that's so amazing. Mm-hmm. But do we really need awards plus millions of dollars if you've gotten to that place in your career? Probably not. Yeah. It's not that big of a deal. Hollywood is not a real place. Well, it is a place. It's actually hell. But it's an idea.
We're here right now. Yeah, exactly. Sunny Hollywood.
Broadcasting from hell. I just feel like the self-congratulations of it, especially as we get into sort of a new way of looking at the world, is a little gross.
Yeah.
It's a little gross.
Yeah. Yeah, spending that amount of money when there's, like, real issues.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
here's the thing, though.
You can get a gold statue.
And it's not even, spend your money however you want. It's the absolute, like, vitriol and anger people have for being like, I was left out of this thing that I think I'm entitled to, that's actually paid for by other people anyway. That's weird to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, it's why I don't watch, every night, I don't eat a lot of meat, but it's why I don't watch, like, chickens being slaughtered, because I will never eat another chicken like, sandwich ever again.
I like how you make it seem like the videos were enticing before. It's like, I used to watch them, but now it's like, I don't want it to lessen my meat consumption.
No, but you know what I mean. Like, no, yeah. We talked about it earlier. Like, the more you know, the sadder you are.
That was one of the conversations that I had when I was considering changing careers, because it was like I never felt really passionate about anything per se, and I was like, I really, really liked comedy, but I also knew that I would still be going to work a job in comedy, and once you can see how the sausage is made and all that stuff, it kind of takes away yeah. the magic of the things that you used to enjoy. And I guess what I'm saying is, work is hell.
Yeah.
Having a job is hell.
Everything becomes a job at some point. But I will say this, though. There is a magic in film and television that every now and then, like, you'll have 30 seconds of beautiful between you and some other actors that's so pure and so honest or so funny, and that will carry you to the next mm-hmm. 30 seconds. And the fact is, you get to touch people wherever they are in their lives. And I know you're looking at me because I know what you're thinking, fucking up my sentimental story.
You can do it to them. They'll let you. You just grab them by the pussy.
You do.
It just really felt like we were going into a monologue.
You
right
get
there.
To touch people wherever they are in their life, in their day.
Right. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Honor in that. And also, why is your arm on your mic so much? Mine looks like... Does mine look weird? Worse than yours?
What do you mean worse?
Yeah, yours looks professional, and mine looks like...
My microphone's an athlete. What's yours doing?
Mine looks like it has a broken wrist.
It's the...
I know! Hate crime. It's a hate crime.
That is a hate crime. Even your microphone's gay. And look at me, straight as an arrow.
I know.
I'm asexual now. No fucking.
Yeah, that we talked about this earlier. See, I don't think about sex as much anymore, but I still enjoy the act of sex. And it's probably because penises are so easy to operate.
Yeah.
Mine really and others. You are not that big fan of sex because you feel like you're making somebody else happy.
Yeah, I truly detest brightening somebody's day.
No, you know what I meant. I was waiting for you to finish it.
When I die and they say she lit up a room, I will roll over.
I was waiting for you
grave.
To finish that sentence. No. Probably in the same way that every man you've ever been was waiting for you to finish.
And they still are waiting to this day. They're all sitting there like, it's been 84 years. Yeah, it's just I have done my fair share of, you know, slutting around, and I use the word slut affectionately in college.
I love sluts.
In college, I I did a psychological experiment where I decided to have sex like a guy, aka I was just having sex for fun, and it was incredible to see the shift in the way they wanted relationships. Like, yeah, as soon as I took that option away, it's like, wait, so what's going on? So I've had plenty. I've done the one night stands, all that stuff, but the one common thread is that sex is never good. Like, there, everybody else is always
so
getting off.
Interesting.
But where am I? And so it's at this point, I'm like, it's not worth it to me to have casual sex, that's for sure. And also, I just am not attracted to people in the way that I used to be anymore.
It's because
I think
seen
there's
too
just
much.
There's just so much bullshit
you've
that I'm like, I don't want to deal with it. I
get it.
I think societally we're really getting to a point where people are moving away from feeling the pressure to be in relationships. I'd like to think that I have been saying that I was going to be alone and childless forever. So I really spearheaded this movement.
There is kind of a monkey component to it. If you look at porn when you're not in the mood to look at porn, it is very, well, obviously it's very primal. But the faces.
Oh yeah. Honestly, when I see porn where people are really enjoying themselves, it's infuriating.
You're mad.
I'm just like, shut up. Shut up. You do not enjoy this that much.
That's hilarious. And really kind of nihilistic.
And now they've banned the type of porn that actually works for me. I'm just kidding.
Is it people almost getting choked to death because you've seen too much porn? No, that is the thing about porn. Your threshold does rise. I think we talked about this earlier.
No, I'm pretty tame there, but it's...
Do you like stories in porn? Accountee or
depends
whatever.
Depends on the acting, honestly. Like,
in porn?
Well, is it believable? Does he really need the job? I don't know.
I've never, ever, ever looked at porn and expected it to be believable.
Listen, we have different thresholds.
That? Do you need that? Do you need this?
You thought Lisa Frankenstein was bad?
Well, my dick wasn't out when I was watching Lisa Frankenstein. So
well, maybe that's the problem. Put your dick in a fucking bowl of milk duds and call it a goddamn day.
Maybe that's why I liked it so much.
Because your dick was out.
His dick was in Lisa's hand. It felt so close to the story, honestly. Yeah, no, it's... No, the acting has to be really top tier. No, what I don't like is the over-exaggerated moans and screams and all that
stuff.
So
I don't like that either. I don't like anything, any artifice I don't like.
And I don't like it because it's boosting a man's ego. Even the men watching it are somehow feeling like those moans are for them. And I'm like, girl, you're doing too much.
So before the condom law passed and porn was shot mostly in the Valley, I live in the Valley. You live in the Valley.
Yeah, I was in two porns.
Were you really, as an actor?
No.
Were you aware that you were in them while they were being made?
Yeah. In college, we had a house, and did I already talk about this on here?
No, you never told me this before.
Oh, well, okay, so I had a house in college. We had a stripper pole in the living room for shits and gigs, pool in the backyard, nice house. And the second year we lived there, one of our roommates that we found off of like Craigslist, which is a really good place to find roommates, was like, hey, my friend's a porn producer. Could we shoot one here? They'll pay us $500 and they'll supply the alcohol. Like, all we have to do is just have a party. It was College Fuckfest. And so
college, that was the name of the porn?
Yeah, College Fuckfest is just one where they just show, they put them in college parties and they
Your parents
just break
know
out
this?
Having sex. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, my dad tunes me out a lot. There was a long period of time where my dad kept deleting me from his Facebook friends, and anytime I would go home, I would just re-add myself because he just didn't want to see what I was posting. My mom is very used to all my bullshit now. But so I was in like the background as a bartender and stuff like that. And I have pictures of it on my Instagram because one of the listeners of ID Cat, I told that story on there, he found it and sent me the link
That's
to it. So
awesome.
I watched it for the first time in like 15 years.
What's it called? College Fuck
College
Fest?
College Fuckfest, yeah.
One or two?
No, that's the name of the site. There are hundreds.
Oh, right.
Went through the archives, found it. I appreciate that.
Well, see, the thing is before the condom law passed, I would watch porn and because you know all of it's shot in the Valley and be like, oh, that's in Chatsworth.
I've been to that house.
I know where that is. Yeah. So that was a fun thing. And then there's a bar in my neighborhood called the Chimney Sweep, which I which it's closed. Did I tell you the chimney sweep
closed?
We used to frequent the chimney sweep. They got allegedly raided for drugs. I'm allegedly, I don't know the full story, so I can't say exactly what happened. Does allegedly protect me from...
Yeah.
I actually don't know what fully happened, but the rumor that I heard was that a drug dealer was operating on the premises, they get raided, and now it's closed. I actually would like to buy it.
Yeah,
I think everybody wants to buy it, though. It was my first bar in when I moved to Studio City. But anyway, I would go there.
The license has been indefinitely revoked.
Yeah, I want that place. I mean, I'm sure that I could probably get a liquor license. I haven't done anything. Do you think they would give me a liquor license? I haven't done anything, have I?
Maybe a lick him license.
Yeah, fuck off.
You were actually one of my first celebrity sightings when I moved here, and I was hanging out at the chimney.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No way.
Like, oh, I'm famous.
Wow, this is the invisible string theory.
I was like, holy shit, that's that guy.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Whoa, invisible string theory is real.
That's really awesome. I don't even know what that means, but.
That was like 16 years ago.
That is 16 years ago?
Yeah.
I'm old.
Oh, no, I had to have been at least 19
then. There's no way that could have been real because I wasn't old enough to be in a bar 16 years ago. Fuck off. I would go there like around, you know, happy hour, and the porn actresses who had worked that day would stop through the chimney sweep, and, you know, they have their hair in buns and they have their you know, glasses on. They look like, you know, young librarians.
Yeah.
And so they would sit there and recount their day. And it was like, you know, I did six scenes today, three of them are anal, but talking about it really clinically with sort of detachment from it. And, you know, I didn't know
how. Because everything, when it becomes a job, it just becomes,
becomes a job.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to think about that. But here's the thing. People, I would tell that story to start to be, oh, you know, that's bad. It's exploitation. And the thing is, I am in no position to be telling anybody what they should be doing with their lives. If you saw what my bathroom looked like right now, you would realize I am not. I shouldn't be telling anybody what to do.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even be telling people that Lisa Frankenstein is bad because my bathroom is that dirty.
It looks like the set after he climbed through the window.
Exactly. And so, but it was, they sort of normalized it a bit. And then one day I went over to buy, because sometimes when I get drunk, I like to play scratchers. So I went over to buy some scratchers and I'm coming back and there's a guy outside who is probably 5'6". He has a hard Southern accent. I found out he was like 20 years old, and he was the actor that they worked with that day. He's outside with tears in his eyes, screaming into the doorway, "These bitches get all the attention. Do you know how hard it is to stay hard and going through the hole?" And I'm like, "Buddy, what's going on here right now?" And he was like, and he gets all emotional and like starts breaking down in front of me. And he was like, "I came out here to be an actor, and these women make so much more money than I do, and what I do is much more difficult." And just starts going this whole thing. And then I get him into. I was like, "Buddy, you're going to get arrested if you don't get out of here." I mean, screaming into a doorway.
It's so hard to stay hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we don't need to be hard right now. Please stop.
Yeah. I mean, yes, we are in a bar in a strip mall, but even then there are societal
it's
rules.
Society. There are rules.
And so I go back in, and then he comes in and starts a kerfuffle with my buddy who's there because he thinks my buddy's trying to hit on these girls. And I don't think he was. And so he and I wound up taking him back out, and then all of a sudden things are normal, calm again. And then he turns around and jerks his pants down to his fucking knees, and he's like, "This was a gift from God," like that kind of stuff. And then the doorman came out, and I went inside because.
Well, that's why he's not successful. He's giving it for free.
You're giving that away for free, buddy.
It could have been $5 somewhere. No, I really respect porn stars for having to do that shit during the day. I just can't imagine, like, waking up in the morning and like going to work and you're like, "Oh, I've got anal at 11:30 like
I
that
actually never thought
that
about that before.
Would be so hard.
I only feel sexy after the sun goes down.
Yes.
In a room that's completely dark.
Blackout shades.
Exactly.
Blackout vinyl on the window. Yeah. Maybe some soft lighting.
That's a good point. I never thought about that before. Feeling sexy at 11 o'clock in the morning is hard.
You're like, "I just had my coffee. We're actually going to move anal to the 2 p.m. slot." We're going to go the blowjob scene first.
Oh, no. Can a podcast get canceled?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
But not for
this. But we don't have any... We don't have any... We're doing this ourselves, so we can say whatever we want, right?
Yeah.
Anal.
Okay, if you could pick over the... That reminds me, there's this trend going around right now where people are putting their kids into the bathroom and like setting up the camera and going, okay, I know you want to say some swear words. You can say it in the bathroom and just get all the swear words out, and then you can come get me when you're done. And then the little kids will be standing there like, stupid motherfucker, bitch. Fuck you, bitch. Fuck you. It's so funny because there are some that are so innocent. They're like, you stupid idiot.
But and some of them are like,
I'll fucking kill you.
I'm going to stab you in the fucking forehead with this pencil.
Yeah, exactly.
A number two that I just sharpened.
And I just imagine a kid going in there and be like, anal.
By the way, we probably need a transition between this me saying anal and you telling a story about you.
You said anal. I'm like, that reminds
Editor,
me.
Editor, get creative.
That reminds me of this trend about children.
Jesus.
Do you want to see one?
Yeah.
Can you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you hear it though?
She's cussing. Okay.
We are only cussing in the bathroom, okay? We are not cussing anywhere but in the bathroom. Okay. And we are not going to give the finger anywhere but in the bathroom because we can't teach our little friends that we're doing this.
Okay.
Okay. So mommy said it's okay for you to do this in the bathroom. Okay. That way you don't get in any more trouble and we can move forward. Got it?
Yeah.
Only in the bathroom.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. She's adorable.
This is just something that you're going to be allowed to do because mommy said so.
Okay.
Motherfucker.
Motherfucker. Motherfucker. You're a motherfucker.
Alright, are you about finished?
No.
She's like, I got some things to say.
Say bitch. I always say bitch in the bathroom. Bitch, bitch, bitch. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I support that.
I think that's brilliant parenting.
It's also like it goes back to, you know, right? You know, we write things down to release them.
Yeah.
I mean, you have getting things out in a safe way
for sure.
Instead of calling
and teaching another kids where it's appropriate to use certain words and stuff like that, because like. I swear a lot, and people would be like, oh, I can't believe you have such a potty mouth. But words have emotion behind them. Like, stories are enhanced by a fuck every once in a while.
But here's the thing. I say fuck, like, you know when a dog board humps you? Like, it's humping you, but it has a bored look on its face. Like,
that's how you say fuck.
Yes. So I think maybe I say it a little too much, but then I ask myself, well, why is it too much? It's because I live in a society and there are rules, probably, but fuck that.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it's better than saying like every other word.
Oh my God. You know what, though? I've noticed doing cameos, I say a lot, and it's really annoying.
But that's part of being really... I guess intentional about what you're going to say is that break instead of like, I'm saying like now, I'm gonna keep filtering myself. But if I just go stream of consciousness, we're not gonna have a good time. We're not gonna get to the point. I need to kind of break
because it's
bit.
All like flying monkeys and scary trees, like the fucking Wizard of Oz in your head.
Yeah, and then tangents and all of that stuff.
But I don't think. Like, I mean, I don't really listen to myself while I'm doing this podcast, but I think that I don't go a lot. I think that I just slow down what I'm saying. I do. I guess I do it. Oh. I'm going to eat a muffin in the mirror tonight with tears in my eyes. Let's don't look at ourselves. Looking at yourself too hard is not good.
Yeah, I know. That's why, I mean... That is when we originally started talking about doing this podcast 4 years ago. The plan was that I would just edit it, and then I go, I can't do that. Yeah, I can't be on the mic and then editing the podcast and then also handling social media. I would truly spiral. I can't. I'm still supposed to watch the first episode to figure out if my sister-in-law said she would watch it. We're going to send her the link today.
So I won't watch any of these episodes because that was the deal, that I wouldn't have to subject myself to any of that and that you would handle that. And then I would just come here.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing. And I'm not going to watch it either.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm in too fragile of a state. So
I'm actually looking forward to the response, though. Like, I don't take things hard when people say shitty stuff. I fully expect that we'll get a bunch of bad things. But I think that's also, it's kind, is it flattering when people crap on you?
The thing is you shouldn't expect to be liked by everybody. I read this book last year that really, really fucking helped me with that feeling of needing everybody to like me or not offending anybody or whatever. But there are some people who our objectives and our morals and values do not align so much so that I'm like, it's good that you don't like me. If you liked me, then maybe I'd be doing something wrong because I'm not standing up for the things that I really believe in or whatever it is. So, you know,
I just feel like what it is. When people have a hard opinion about something that about me that sort of lands meaningless, like I just feel like it doesn't feel like anything. Like when people want to come at me sideways, I don't know you. I'm never gonna. And also, all you have to do is when you get a comment, if you're feeling some kind of way about it, you mute it, mute the conversation. You didn't even. I would never block somebody, give them satisfaction, but you mute the conversation, and 5 minutes later, it never happened.
Right. Yeah. I think what's interesting is that social media has taken gossip, which I think is a completely normal and good thing for society, and it's brought it to, especially for reality stars, I feel badly for them. Actors and musicians tend to be pretty insulated from their own social media, so all of the think pieces that people are doing about them or the comments, they're probably not seeing so much of them, but for people in reality, those types of worlds, these people are coming directly to their profiles and spewing hate or making videos and tagging them and all that stuff. And their job is to be online, so it's impossible to avoid it. And everybody thinks they have this right to their opinion and all that stuff. But it's like, it's fine to say it in the living room with your friend, but to go like send a letter to somebody telling them you hate them is very bizarre.
It's like I told you,
bizarre.
I got that letter from Japan once. They just said, I want you die.
I want you die.
But I was like, wow, I'm famous in Japan. That's how I looked at it. You can spin anything.
If nobody hates you, then you're also not making any splashes.
But I get what you're saying, though. People in the reality world and also people in the general public feel like people in reality shows are asking for that kind of involvement.
Yeah, yeah. I think the perception is that anybody who is on TV is rich and making a lot of money. And so the empathy for anything that they go through, it kind of goes out the window because it's like, well, you're famous now.
Yeah,
it's
shut
like,
up and act. Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah, if you have an opinion about something or something bad happens to you. Yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah. Fucking people.
They don't realize that, first of all, nobody knows behind the doors of anybody's lives, right? I mean, nobody really knows anybody. But even with, like, there's a sacrifice for all of that stuff that people are making. And so, I mean, people, but it's more complicated with reality stars, though, because they're literally selling their privacy. Mm-hmm. That's when your privacy has been put up for sale. Actors and musicians, for the most part, don't put our privacy up for sale.
Right.
It just gets invaded, and you just learn to cope with it. I remember 1 year my buddy got into medical school and I knew I wouldn't see him for 4 years. So I was like, me and you, 6 weeks in Europe. We wound up actually going, I think, nearly for 10. But we went without cell phones and we were in the Vatican. And we walked into the Vatican. I was there for the art.
Mm-hmm. I had a panic attack at the Vatican.
And did you really? Yeah. Is it because you're a bad Catholic and you're going to hell?
I'll tell you after.
Okay. So we go in there and there's a lady from New Jersey with a nun praying for her mother. That's the first thing I hear when I go in there. So it's, you know, there's a solemnness to it. And even though it's, you know, religion is not necessarily my thing, there's the history, and I'm really interested in human history and art. So I'm in there, and this woman and her kids are, like, they're from St. Louis. And they start taking photos of me. And then, and I'm like, and I'm uncomfortable, but you know, when I'm in a public place, and then they come over and like in the earshot of the lady from New Jersey, like I'm not far from her. I'm like, let's get a photo together. Like without asking me, like, gathering around, I'm like, I can't do that right now. I can't, this is not the right place for that. And then she walks over and then yells in my earshot, well, we'll never watch another one of his movies again. And so that was the first time I'd ever seen that before. Mm-hmm. And I felt that wasn't deserved. Right. I felt like I hadn't sold my privacy. As a matter of fact, I was trying to protect myself because if I was out at that point, my career would have been taken from me. I actually was the opposite of that. Like I had to be dragged onto carpets or parties because I was trying to protect myself. And then at Dachau concentration camp a few days later in Munich, people always talk about the ugly American tourist. Let me tell you. Bastards are come from every country. These kids, these gorgeous blonde boys from Scandinavia did the same thing at Dachau. Like, I was having a hard time. It's a graveyard.
Yeah.
And tried to take photos with me, and I refused. And they got really, really aggressive and belligerent with me. And then I ran out of cigarettes, and I started to freak out about that. And plus all the shit I'd just seen about Dachau, plus these blonde kids being mean to me at a concentration camp, which was, you know. And so then we get into town and all the cigarettes are behind glass and you need an ID with a chip to access it. And I sat
punched through.
I sat on the sidewalk and cried. Every person I pass, I beg them for
their ID. A single mom who works two jobs.
Who loves her kids and never stopped. Being famous is hard.
I know. I'm so sorry, boo-boo. I'm so sorry.
No, but seriously.
I think that that's something people really underestimate, how violating of your space people really are willing to be. Like, I would never go up to somebody famous and ask for a picture.
Oh, I would. See, that's our difference.
See,
I'm next to a famous person who I liked when I was, before I started acting, or even whose work I like, I do this. Oh my God, it's so and so, and they're right beside me. Sometimes out loud. I've never, ever, ever lost that. It's who I've always been. I always do this. I won't ask for a picture if they're in a moment, but if it's in an event, like if they were all
sure,
at an event,
yes.
I'll do that.
I'm talking about people that will walk up and interrupt.
I mean, I'm not
going
to sit down with dinner with somebody. I mean, that's happened to me. My dad got very upset once somebody sat down with us at dinner, and my dad got really verbally upset. And I was like, it's understandable. I don't see him that much, and it's weird for him. But then I was like, you actually can't do that. That's you're actually making a choice for me, and you cannot do that. Mm-hmm. And it was hard for him to understand. And, but in public, when people are going through things or dinner or whatever, I never do that. But one year I was at the closing party of San Diego Comic-Con, and San Diego Comic-Con is unlike other Comic-Cons in that fact, it's just publicity. You go there to promote your stuff, you do panels, and you go to parties at night. And I stay away from the parties, but the closing party, the Entertainment Weekly party, it's an honor to be invited. I've been invited every year that I've been, and I don't throw that invitation away, although I did last year. But I usually don't. And because it's a reunion for the actors, you'll see people you haven't seen in 12 years.
Yeah.
And it's a safe space for us to see each other and reminisce. And I really, 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 I value that experience. Why am I talking about this?
You will take pictures with
celebrities. Oh, yeah, yeah. And so I have a friend who is a good friend of mine who lives in San Diego, and I would always borrow him from his wife, and he would be my date to the Entertainment Weekly party because he likes the idea of celebrity, and he loves movies and film and television. And just, like, he's a massive fan of them. And so, but he's my friend, and so he's never asked to take a photo with anybody. He saw Danny McBride. And he was like, I really want to meet Danny McBride. I really love him. And I've never met Danny McBride before. And so Danny is in the midst of a heated discussion with a woman, and they're really close to each other, talking vehemently, both of them. And I don't know the dynamic that's going on, but it didn't look like something that you should interrupt.
Right.
Well, it was getting very late. People were starting to clear out, and they were still into this heated discussion, and Danny really wanted this photo. And I was deep in my consumption of alcohol. And so I was like, I have to do this. I have to break this up for a second and talk to him. So I tap him on the shoulder and he turns to me and does this, "What?" And I went, and he went like this, "Oh, DJ, hi." And I'm like, oh my God, Danny probably knows my name, first of all. Ego, ego, ego. And I was like, "Danny, I'm so sorry. I know everybody says this, but I never do this. But my friend has never asked to ever meet anybody, and you're the only person at this whole thing that he wants to meet." And he was like, took time out, did what we were supposed to do, hugged me. We went away, and then went right back into his thing with his friend. And I felt so bad about violating in his space, but the absolute grace,
right,
the way he handled that. But if I then again,
but if you weren't DJ again, when you turned around,
then again he would have been like, "Get out of here, motherfucker! What are you doing?
Can't you see?"
Yeah, but yeah, I remember like the absolute fear that I was going to have. I have to do this. In waiting for all these moments to pass.
Yeah, I've taken pictures with people who like came onto the Jim Jefferies show. Like, I took a picture with Bob Saget because we wrote a sketch for him and all that. And
I loved Bob.
He's such a great fucking guy. We worked with him on the show. So nice. And he was so easy. He was like, yeah, of course, like, great. And he's, let's get multiple angles, blah blah blah. We miss Bob.
My very first favorite story from Legit was, I was supposed to do an episode of Supernatural, and the producers of that show, I told them, I was like, I'm on a series regular on this show called Legit, and we are working that week that you need me. And they blew it off, and they're like, "Well, that's why you have an agent, while we have producers, we'll work it out." Then they offer me the dates, and I'm working all but three of those days. And so I'm like, I can't be there for this episode. And one of the producers calls me directly and threatens me, or Vail threatened me. He was like, "This, you need to work this out. We've already boarded this. We start shooting next week." And I'm like, "I told you that I am under contract to another show. This is a guest star. I'm a series regular with a contract signed. And if I don't show up to work, I am sued." And I love the show. And I wind up getting very upset by this sort of veiled threat and bullying in a way, and told the producers of Legit, and we wound up getting into a heated argument about it. I'm like, "Well, actually, you could shoot me out." And we got them to condense the shooting to a few days. They wound up having to build some of the they'd already shot. They were shooting with a double. They wound up having to build the bottom floor of a house on a soundstage at a cost of like $300,000 or something. Jesus. I know. And but here's the best memory I have, though, from that show was I was shooting with Carrie Fisher those days. And I needed to get into a car with a police escort to the airport, which is not a great, which I will acknowledge is not a great allocation of community resources. But if I missed this flight, it was the last flight to Vancouver, I would have missed another day. I would have been late and I was getting so much shit for it, which is so crazy that they were pressuring me like this. I had nothing to do with any of this. But they had to grab a quick shot, and the car was outside, and it was really getting to a place. LAX is hard to get to. And she was running camera equipment across the set so they could reposition the camera to get my reaction to something. Like, the absolute dedication and the understanding of what actors have to go through, and the panic I was feeling of disappointing two separate shows. And then I get there, and the first AD, that's the guy who does all the scheduling. He basically is under the director. He doesn't do creative stuff, but he does all of the practical thing of filming. The first thing he said to me was, "You cost us $300,000. Like, it was my fault."
Like, they kept telling me, "This is why we have producers and agents and managers who will
figure
it out."
Screw this guy. He may no longer be with us. And if that's the case, I'm sorry. But he was not kind to me. And I was already rattled. But think about this. And that also goes to the perception. We are employees. And the majority of us, like, I'm in a good spot. I don't have to audition for all of this stuff. And I love the fact that I get to have a little bit of choice in my career. But you're getting yelled at all the time for stuff that you can't control. And like, I remember when I was doing The Core, they rewrote those scenes. My first day I had this monologue where I'm sitting down and I'm surrounded by like Richard Jenkins and Stanley Tucci and Aaron Eckhart, like all these big actors. And they rewrote this monologue while, like, and gave me the pages after I rehearsed it. And they're like, and And I'm like, I can't do this. And the director did this. Darling, we're going to shoot it as you learn it. A mistake. Here's what I learned. No matter if they tell you that they'll shoot it while you learn it, you're always going to be the asshole if you don't know your lines.
Yeah.
And so people started getting impatient with me, not the actors, but the producer certainly did. And it taught me that what I should have done was, I'm going to need a minute with this. I am gone into the trailer and come out when I knew the lines, because you're blamed for everything. Right. That's not your fault. And then when I was doing a pilot for this show called Memphis Beat in New Orleans, working with my mentor, an actress who I love to pieces, her name's Alfre Woodard, and she's just an incredible actor. And she's actually one of the first actors I met who I had like a strong connection with that she wasn't there for. Mm-hmm. She was Bill Murray's secretary in Scrooge, and I sat down with her at the read-through in Vancouver, and she sits next to me, and she's Alfre Woodard and all her Alfre Woodardness and everything I thought she would be and more. And I am like digging my hands into the table, and she taps me on the shoulder, and she was like, "My kids love you." And I turned her and did this. "I love you." I did. I was so embarrassed. And she was like, no, always lead with your truth. If I can't handle that's on me, right? So wonderful. Anyway, we got to work together again on the show where I was playing a cop. It was a George Clooney produced show in New Orleans. I was so stoked to be there. George Clooney, I'm in New Orleans. It was the biggest paycheck I'd ever had to that point. And the first AD rough talked me in front of the crew. We were losing the light, we were losing the time, and we were behind schedule. And I overstepped my mark and a couple times, and he came over to me. He's like, "Do you know what a mark is? Let me tell you what a mark is. Your only job is to show up and know where to stand. Look at whatever." And so I was like shell-shocked by it and really embarrassed. And Alfred came over and she was like, "He thinks because you look so young that you're a boy and you're going to have to show him that you're a man." And so
pulled your pants down.
He kept doing it. I no, but you know what I mean?
Said, "Look at this." Because
the thing is, the point I'm making is that a lot of treatment is not just job-based, it's appearance-based.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And people, it's like when I did Road Trip, I realized that if they laughed at me, my whole career would have been people in public thinking they could do that.
Right.
You cannot laugh at me. Well, you can, but I'm not going to be.
You're not going to sit by and accept
it. You're not going to run over me.
Yeah.
And so he was running over me, and then he kept doing it. And the rage I started feeling when I realized, if I don't put a stop to this, also these jobs are hard to get, and I've worked hard to get to this place in my career. I sacrificed everything. And it wasn't just the years I've been in Hollywood. It was all the years that came before that, and the bullying in high school, and mm-hmm. every moment came to this thing. And I got flooded with rage, and I did him the courtesy that he did not give me, which I pulled him aside. I pulled the producer and him aside and said this: "Your only job is to make sure I can do my job, and I cannot do my job. If I'm mad at you, don't ever fucking talk to me like that again."
Nice.
And went back. And it was this moment of absolute getting the rage out, but the calm that I felt after that. And it really, that moment also prepared me for a lot of things that happened in society and happened on set. And the fact that you come from this place, I'm not going to embarrass you for other people, but you will not fucking do this to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to, I'll call the president of the network. If I have to, I'll go on television and talk about your ass, but you will not treat me or anyone around me like that.
Right.
You're not going to rough talk an actor around me. You're not going to do it.
Yeah, but
if you let them, they will. And a lot of it, it's. I feel like, I mean, I wouldn't equate myself to how women are treated because I don't know what that's like. But I do know this: if people in power think they can get away with something with you, they will do it.
Yes.
In the same way that guy on the block cried in front of the tradesmen. And by the way, The Block's my favorite show. I'm addicted to it. I've talked about it every podcast. It's on Tubi. I just discovered Tubi. I'm sure you all.
We don't get a Block sponsor.
I'm sure you all knew about Tubi 6 years ago, but I found out about it like 3 weeks ago. And I watched The Block. But this guy was vulnerable in front of these men, these bros. And I love bros, by the way. But bros don't always have to act like bros. But when bros are acting like bros, I don't fucking like it. And he was vulnerable in front of them. And then everybody, even the people he was employing, like his tradesmen that he was paying out of his pocket, were rough treating him. It's because you have to have a moment where we're pack animals. And at some point you have to do this. You cannot do this to me anymore. Yeah. But correcting you lose people, your power, though, I think when you do it in front of people, it also negates your message if they've embarrassed you and you do it in front of other people. You only do that if you've tried every other way. And then you pull rank on, or kill them. I don't really. I can't.
We wouldn't suggest it.
I tried
everything else.
I cannot endorse violence, but I will say this. Well, I won't say it. I was getting ready to tell a story of myself, but I'm not. That's more of a second date thing.
Save and that
I,
for next
I think
week.
We're still on our first date.
Yeah.
It may have involved me suggesting to someone else for financial consideration to punch somebody.
Hey, I want to hear that story next time. We're going to get out of here, though.
Are we done?
Yeah, we're done.
Wow, it's always like being in a car crash being on this podcast. It's like...
Traumatizing, painful.
Yeah. And then you don't remember any of it.
Financially draining. All right, guys, you can check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/loadedpod, where you will get the episodes a week early, video, and also...
We're going to do some bonus content.
Yeah, bonus
Kelly
content.
Kelly and I... Can I tip it? Can I tell them what we're going to do? We're getting our face lasered off. We're going to Canada where it's cheaper, and we're getting our face lasered off. All
yeah,
for you.
Not super soon. It's
no.
It's going to be in the fall,
No,
right?
but we're teasing.
We are teasing.
This is such a traumatic, I think... this. I showed Kelly the photos. This is such a traumatic... sort of bonus content thing that I'm preparing her for it now and you for it now.
Yeah, you keep showing me the recovery videos and I'm like, can't wait.
I showed them to Ty and Ty was, he just said this, why? Because.
We're not going to be stuck that way forever. You can email us at probablyloadedpod@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, TikTok, wherever.
And we're going to have a website soon.
We do have a website, loadedpod.com.
Do you
want
to say that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much it'll be updated. I had to figure out how to make a website to make that. So
don't go to the website. It's going to suck. You'll be disappointed.
It'll be fine.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Sit on down and pour yourself a glass.
And tune in to your favorite podcast.
Where things will be misquoted.
And